From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM, the world's most listened to late night talk show. Next hour, Chupacabras and Other Mysteries with Scott Corrales. Now listen to this story. This comes from Al Jazeera, you know, the Arabic television network. They say, could Bin Laden possibly be in China? There has been a rumor that Bin Laden has been in China. Well, listen to this story. Reports suggest that the United States is currently negotiating with senior officials in the Chinese capital of Beijing with the hope of reaching an agreement for the eviction of the Saudi-born al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden from his asylum in China. That's in the northwest part of the nation. Not less than 5 million people, all followers of Osama, are believed to be living in that region as well, which can be called one of the most volatile regions of Earth. Last year, apparently, bin Laden reached a highly secretive agreement with the authorities in Beijing in which he was granted asylum in return for his guarantees to put the war of the Chinese Muslim minority against the Chinese nation to an end. Now, as you all know, we went into Afghanistan because they refused to evict. They refused to hand over Osama bin Laden. If he is indeed in China, will we do the same thing if they do not evict him from that country? The discovery in Texas of a jacket featuring an Arabic military badge and an airplane headed toward a tower with words "Midnight Mission" seems to be fueling fears of a possible connection to terrorism. According to a Department of Homeland Security morning brief marked for official use only, a report from the Customs and Border Protection Group noted that on December 23rd, Border Patrol agents in Texas found a jacket with an Arabic patch in a layup area on Highway 285. The jacket is said to have a total of three patches, two sewn on the back, one on the inside. The two patches on the back were an Arabic military badge, one with letters Dahwa, while the other patch on the inside read Midnight Mission. This Midnight Mission patch features a logo, again, depicting an airplane flying over a building heading towards a tower, and they just don't know what it means. There's been another day of violence across Iraq as the country prepares for its Sunday's election. The bombs and gun battles, mainly in the Sunni Muslim area, killed at least a dozen Iraqis and a U.S. Marine, while a clutch of polling stations were also hit. Rebels have urged voters to boycott the poll, threatening more attacks. In Australia, for example, Iraqi expatriates have begun voting. They are among 280,000 exiles registered to vote in 14 countries, including the United States. Up on the coasttocoastam.com website, under Hot Stories, the Navy publishing its first photos of that damaged sub. The USS San Francisco is now in dry dock in Guam. The submarine's front end was severely damaged when the submarine struck an undersea mountain 350 miles south of Guam. I got to tell you, by the look of that picture, it is amazing that that sub was able to get back to the top, because the front of it apparently was just hanging when divers cut off the dome. U.S. Navy, by the way, is surveying the Malacca Strait area and the coastal waters off Indonesia for signs that last month's devastating Indian Ocean tsunami altered the seabed under the world's busiest shipping lane. Some people think, now others are not agreeing with this, that the tsunami raised the landmass on the floor of the ocean some 3,000 feet. 3,000 feet. Others are saying, no, it was only about 60 feet. But the U.S. Navy is going to go survey that area. Big story today. Scientists have begun blurring the line between human and animal by producing chimeras, a hybrid creature that apparently is part human and part animal. Chinese scientists successfully fused human cells with rabbit eggs. Tomorrow, Stephen Quayle will be talking with us about this. The embryos were reported the first human-animal chimeras successfully created. Now, in Minnesota last year, researchers at the Mayo Clinic created pigs with human blood flowing through their bodies. And as you know, people with heart problems have had pig valves sewn right into their system, and they seem to be working perfectly. An amazing story out of Nelson, British Columbia. Police there are crediting a psychic for leading them to the body of a young woman missing since March. Exhaustive searches using dogs, helicopters, and heat-sensing devices had failed to turn up any sign of the 23-year-old woman whose car was found parked by a popular hiking and walking area along the town and British Columbia's interior. The investigation was ongoing for 8 or 9 months. They turned to the help of a psychic, Norman Pratt, and they were able to find the bones of the woman. In a moment, the psychic Norman Pratt, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Now, as I just mentioned, police in Nelson, British Columbia, Canada, credit a psychic for leading them to the body of a young woman missing since March. They had a number of searches using dogs, helicopters, and heat-sensing devices, had failed to turn up any sign of Kimberly Sargent, a 23-year-old woman whose car was found parked by a very popular hiking and walking area above the town in British Columbia's interior. According to Sergeant Steve Bank of the Nelson Police, says this investigation was ongoing for 8 or 9 months, and there were dozens of searches. In the forest, he says, it's very much like a needle in a haystack, especially in the area where she was eventually located. It's very, very dense. Well, last week, DNA analysis from the University of British Columbia confirmed that the bones found last November, with the help of psychic Norman Pratt, were indeed Ms. Sargent's. Mr. Pratt is our guest for a moment here on Coast to Coast. Norman, thank you for coming on the program. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell me about this. I mean, it is not unusual for psychics to help police, but when there is a truly remarkable story like this, it does make a lot of people just wake up a little bit and realize that there are some gifted people on this planet, you being one of them. How did this all come about for you, Norman?
Feels to me like we're all pretty gifted, actually. It came about, a friend of mine called me about a missing girl. And she felt that I might be able to help out with it because of some of my intuitive ability. And I did do some work around it, which for me was practicing a little bit of meditation and also going for a walk in the woods where I live. I live along a riverside, just beautiful 20 acres, and it's a great place to spend quiet time. And in doing that, sometimes I can just quiet my mind enough to allow information to flow in. And I started getting details about this missing girl that I felt were accurate enough to go to the police with. And that took a lot for me to do, but I called them, and they were very receptive to hearing what I had to say. I gave them the details that I had, and they were able to validate those as being accurate, and they had not released any of those details publicly. So we did a little dance around how I got my information, and once they got comfortable with what I had to say, they invited me to be part of their investigation.
Had this ever happened to you before? I mean, have you helped police departments?
I've called police departments a couple of times in the past and not got the same reception I got this time. This time I got an officer who you mentioned, Steve Bank, very open and caring individual, and they really had sort of exhausted their usual methods of, you know, searching, and they really did feel at a loss, and they were ready to talk to a psychic. And so it was good timing. I phoned just when he was basically ready to talk to somebody like me. And he was open and pretty much immediately invited me to help out.
At any point, Norm, did they look at you with a suspicious eye going, how does he know what's going on?
Yeah, and I can't say as I blame them for that. There's a moment in time where they're going to take a look at you and wonder how you got your information. And but they, early on in their investigation, they basically ruled out, as much as they could, foul play, and in so doing, ruled me out as well.
Well, that's a good thing. Now, tell us about those impressions that you picked up, which helped lead them to find her.
Okay. You're using the word psychic, and that's relatively accurate. I call myself a psychic intuitive.
Okay.
And psychic for me is, it's a few things. Like, for example, in your home, you might have the radio on, and you might have the TV on, and you might have a friend in the kitchen talking to you sort of from a distance. That's what it's like to be psychic sometimes. The radio is sort of like clairaudience, where you're hearing things. The TV is a little bit like clairvoyance, where you're seeing images play out. And the friend in the room could be like clairsentience, where you're sort of picking up the spirit and you're starting to feel feelings come through. And for me, those all translate into pretty distinct impressions, and I can start to put the information together and get a sense of what's going on. And that's what happened in this case.
Now, as you said, police do not suspect any foul play involved in her death. Have they reported, Norm, what they think happened to her?
No, they haven't, because it's a fairly sensitive investigation. The next of kin have just been notified in the last few days, so it's a sensitive issue, and I think that's something they may or may not disclose later on, but that's best left alone, I guess, for now.
No, well, I agree with that. I agree wholeheartedly. Let's talk a little bit about the psychic intuitive ability that you have, and that I think all of us have the ability.
Absolutely.
Once we're channeled. How long have you been practicing this?
I've only been practicing in a big way for about 3 years. I've known I had some ability probably since I was about 15 or 16, having a couple of visions and knowing, okay, this is out of the ordinary. And then sort of throughout my early adulthood, and I'm 45, so this has been going on for a long time, sort of hit and miss, things would come and go. About 10 years ago, a little boy went missing in Vancouver, B.C., and he was about the same age as a couple of my sons, and that really hit home for me. I really identified with the parents, just the hopeless struggle they were going through. There was absolutely no information. The police didn't have any leads, and the parents were on TV every night, begging and pleading for their son to be found or returned if he'd been abducted or whatever. And my heart really went out to them in a big way. And in that moment, I just wished that I could be psychic and help out in that regard, because it didn't seem to be any other way of generating information. And I think from that time on, that seed got planted in my mind, and I started to have more psychic experiences, and then to a degree where I decided I'm going to work on this full time. And I basically made it my practice to develop my ability as best I could.
Has anyone in your family had the same abilities that you have?
Not to my knowledge. I really believe everybody has the ability. Like you say, everybody gets gut feelings or little premonitions of something coming up, like who's, the phone's about to ring and you know who it's going to be,
or
who you're going to see at the post office or something. So, and even the police can relate on that level, because they go on gut instinct a lot of the time, and everybody's intuitive to some degree.
When they found the body, were you with them?
Yes.
Okay, explain that procedure for me if you can.
The details of the case particularly,
okay.
But there were several searches early on done before I was involved, and they didn't turn up anything. When I got involved, we ended up searching areas that I felt would be important, because at the time I was having visions, and the visions I was having were sort of the area that she might have been in and sort of some of the circumstances around what might have happened, that kind of thing. It was hard to know for sure. There was no way of validating that information, but I felt pretty sure about it. And so I basically ascertained a target search area, and we carried out a couple of searches to no avail initially. Eventually, I was able to go out and locate her clothes, and shortly after, some of the remains.
After you went to the police, Norm, did you still continue to pick up intuitive senses of where she was, what might have happened, or did it just all come prior to you going to see them?
It was very much an ongoing process. And because it went on for so long, it was sort of a developmental process as well. Certainly I improved in my ability to sort of discern what I was getting as time went on.
When the bones were found, I mean, for you personally, it must have been one, the word's a difficult word to explain. I mean, I know you were satisfied with your abilities, but at the same time, did you really want them to find her? it's tough. It's like one of those catch-22s.
It's a push-me-pull-ya. It's an emotional experience. On the one hand, you feel like you're really serving and really filling a purpose, and hopefully doing something that's going to bring some good for people. Certain the family didn't know what was going on, and it's nice for people to have closure. At the same time, you didn't want it to be bad news for people, and or not the news that they were certainly hoping for.
True.
So, yeah, it was a mixed bag that way. But there's also some personal validation in finding the remains, and then we had to wait a couple months for the DNA to actually be processed and confirmed. And then once that came through, it's that's rewarding in itself. But, you know, it comes with the price of knowing that that family's pretty devastated, and I definitely feel their sadness, and my heart goes out to them, too, so it's... There's a little bit to it.
I have a quote from Sergeant Steve Bank, who says that the police would not have found Mrs. Sergeant without you. His quote is, "I really believe I'd still be investigating a missing person if it was not for him." He identified an area where she would be located. When she was eventually found, she was right where he said she would be. These sorts of investigations attract all kinds of help. Lots of it is psychic help. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it does not. And in your case, it did help. Now, in terms of other things that you do, Norm, are you psychic, intuitive enough? Are you looking at events in the future now? I mean, I've got to say you're pretty accurate, and I'm just curious to see if you see some other things happening worldwide now.
No, I don't necessarily predict in that way, and it's unfortunately not on an on-call basis. I do professional psychic intuitive readings for people, and often people come wanting, you know, their fortune told, or that's about love or money or relationships or job or whatever. And I often find that's sort of the presenting surface thing they're dealing with, and really when we get to talk, we find out those aren't the issues. The issues end up being about why they're not happy in their life and maybe what needs to happen for them to move past that. And I also basically try to empower people in that I teach them to find their own intuitive guidance and how to go about that. And it's very much like a muscle that the more you work it, the stronger it gets. And, I get a lot of joy out of helping people do that.
Do you find that some people who come in with negative energy need a lot of help, and then others surround themselves with what we have always called great karma, positive energy, and they're more apt to be intuitive?
Certainly some people are more open than others. I'd probably describe it on that level as opposed to energy, because everybody's got a little bit of different kinds of energy around them. And even in a moment, you can, you know, have negative stuff going on or positive stuff going on. People that are closed-minded, it's hard to work with. But sometimes they're right up against a barrier, and it doesn't take too long before that barrier breaks down.
I know there are some psychics who work with police trying to find missing children, and that's got to be a very difficult job as well. Is that something that you would entertain if you had to?
Very much so. I came home today with 11 messages on my machine, and 4 of those are for missing children.
Oh, my.
So, I really feel like this is service work. The professional work I do is more along the lines of readings and that kind of thing, and the missing people is more of a service anyway.
Well, I guess everyone wants closure in some form or fashion. I just could not put myself through I think the torment that I'm sure I would go through if anything happened to my family.
And
you just didn't know.
Yeah, well, that's certainly what we hope would happen in this case, and I hope will happen with these other cases that are obviously sitting here in front of me. But you just have to see what happens. And things seem to have a life of their own and a timing of their own, and I'm certainly learning that as I go along, that it's always bigger than me, and I can, you know, try to receive the intuitive guidance I can and discern it as best I can and be as clear and effective in interpreting it and conveying it. But often you get images or visions or even just gut feelings, you know, intuitive feelings that are like pieces of a puzzle, and you don't know what puzzle they belong to. And the more work you do, maybe you can put a framework together for that particular puzzle, and maybe you just have to let those pieces go.
Do you get exhausted after these events, Norm? Is it mentally
draining? It's certainly, like running on adrenaline at times. The energy can get really high. But, I just try to have balance in my life like everybody else. Played hockey at lunchtime today. That's a great balance. And lots of rest and that kind of thing. But generally, it's a very positive experience.
Do you find that you'll probably get some calls now from other police departments for help?
Yeah, I do. And I'm kind of referring people that are phoning about missing people cases that to to approach me through the local police, because it's just a much better way of handling things, and it's easier to access the information and support the police, because often, you know, they're at a dead end and maybe they're open to help.
Absolutely. Well, Norm, I want to, one, thank you for the job you did for the family of this 23-year-old woman, and just the fact that there are people out there like you with these abilities, it's kind of refreshing. But thank you very much. Difficult circumstance for you, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your calling.
Okay, you take care. That's okay, Norm Pratt. Care. He's psychic intuitive, as you just said. And he was the one who had these impressions of where the 23-year-old woman in British Columbia just might be. And he was able to lead police to her body after she was missing for 8 or 9 months. And Coast to Coast continues when I come right back, because our guest will be Mark Antonacci. We're going to talk about the breaking story from last night that the Shroud of Turin is much older than suggested. What does that all mean? We'll get Mark Antonacci, who's an expert on the Shroud of Turin. We'll get his take on all this when we come right back. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. Presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
At the top of the hour, my guest, Scott Corrales. We're going to be talking about the chupacabras, also on Hispanic ufology. He has done a lot of work in that arena, what's going on in Mexico and Puerto Rico. So I'm looking forward to talking with Scott about those subjects as well. Up on the coasttocoastam.com website, Lex has posted a little snippet of the After Dark CD that we are making available to you. This one is The Monkey's Paw. It is a neat story. The After Dark CD, 2.5 hours, double CD of ghost stories, calls to the show, and some great bumper music. How do you get it? Well, two ways. You can go to the website and order it, very safe and secure, afterdarkcd.com. That's afterdarkcd.com. Or call this toll-free number. Here it is. 1-800-598-2331. 1-800-598-2331. All of this was done when the producer came up to me several months ago and said, hey, I'd like to do this. You know, you've got bumper music. People would like some of this. And so we gave him the okay, but it is the last one and the only one I will do in my career. So if you're interested in it, call 1-800-598-2331. Well, as we reported last night on Coast to Coast, the Shroud of Turin is much older than suggested by radiocarbon dating carried out in the 1980s, according to a new study. This research paper suggests that the Shroud is between 1,300 and 3,000 years old. The author dismisses 1988 carbon-14 dating tests, which concluded that the linen sheet was a medieval fake. The shroud, which bears the faint image of a blood-covered man, is believed by some to be Christ's burial cloth. Now, Raymond Rogers says his research and chemical tests show that the material used in the 1988 radiocarbon analysis was cut from a medieval patch woven into the shroud to repair fire damage. This, he says, was responsible for an invalid date being assigned to the original shroud cloth. Now, Mark Antonacci is a St. Louis attorney who spent almost 20 years researching and writing the most recent and comprehensive book on the subject, The Resurrection of the Shroud. His book provides the first scientific explanation of how the body and blood images on the shroud were formed and the future testing to verify the explanation. The first scientific explanation of the shroud's carbon dating results and the future testing to confirm the explanation and calculate the cloth's true age, and that for the first time in history, there is an extensive amount of medical, scientific, archaeological, and historical evidence for the crucifixion and resurrection of the historical Jesus Christ. Our guest this hour, Mark Antonacci. Mark, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Thanks, George.
Now, I remember when I talked with you almost 2 years ago, and then before that in St. Louis, you were one of the first to come out and say that 1988 carbon dating was not accurate. I remember that.
Yes.
You based it on similar things that Raymond Rogers has done in his research?
Well, Ray says that the shroud is a repair piece. Now, I agree that the shroud is much older than the Middle Ages, which is what Ray is basically saying. We go much further than that. We say that the evidence clearly indicates it's from the first century. I disagree with Ray's explanation. I do not think that they carbon dated a patch from the Shroud of Turin. Ray says that there's a piece. Well, there was a piece removed in 1973 for textile analysis, and there was a piece removed in 1988 for radiocarbon dating. The two pieces are contiguous. They're side by side.
Right.
And the two of them, they roughly form a rectangular shape, approximately 1 inch by maybe 4 3/4 inches. And he says at least part, if not all of that, is a repair piece. Now, I wish him well, and if he's correct, it doesn't refute our explanation or anything like that. It's possible we could even both be correct.
Well, and the important thing here is your research, Mark, and that of Raymond Rogers at least does one thing, and that is to refute the 1988 carbon dating test, because it leads you back, regardless of whether it's the first century as you predict or the dates that Rogers predicts, it leads you back to the fact that it's very possible that the Shroud of Turin was there indeed during the period of Christ, and that the image on that shroud, which we'll talk with you about in just a second here, is very, very unusual.
Oh, it's the most unique image in all of history. No ifs, ands, or buts about that.
I think what is so astonishing about this case, specifically with you, Mark, is not only were you not a believer in the Shroud of Turin in the beginning, you weren't a believer in the entire story of Christ, right?
No, I really wasn't. I was raised in a Christian tradition, but I went to church because my folks made me go to church, and when I got off on my own in college and that, I never went back to church. I just kind of dismissed it. But it was exactly the scientific, the medical, the archaeological evidence that I came across, which is derived from the Shroud of Turin, that made me realize that the events described in the Gospels concerning every element of the passion, crucifixion, death, and yes, resurrection of the historical Jesus Christ were all literal, actual events.
So you believe that the shroud depicts Christ after he died, resurrected. Explain to us how you believe the image, God on the shroud.
And our hypothesis can be tested. It is a unique hypothesis, and there is unique tests that can be done. We claim, and many, many scientists now agree with this, in fact, Ray Rogers' paper even hints on this as well, that radiation irradiated the cloth. We say they caused the images on the Shroud of Turin. And the source of the radiation is the length and the width and even the depth of the dead body wrapped in the shroud. That is the dead body of the historical Jesus. And the most interesting thing is that the type of radiation that most closely matches all of the various unique features on that body image, including things like microchemical features of the body image, is particle radiation, which humans could not produce until the middle of the 20th century, the Manhattan Project. And this is a completely unfakeable, completely unnatural event, and it can be tested. You could prove this with 8 pieces of empirical evidence. Particle radiation will create unique isotopes that do not occur in nature, and it would be in any of the cloth samples that you tested from the shroud, any of the thousands of pollens that have been removed from the shroud, any on the particles of blood, and the man is bloodied from head to foot on the shroud, and any of the limestone particles, not only between the threads, but there would be billions of grains of limestone in Jesus' tomb, and archaeologists and historians think they know where his burial tomb is. But you could prove that not only that event occurred, you could prove it happened in Jesus' burial tomb and that it occurred in the first century. It would be the first objective, independent, empirical evidence ever in history for a miraculous event. And this event, obviously, would be his resurrection.
This event must have had, then, an incredible burst of, as you say, radiation energy that created this image on the shroud. How much radiation, how much of a burst of energy was needed? If there were witnesses, let's say, Mark, if you happened to have been standing there several thousand years ago and you witnessed this, what would you have seen?
Well, particle radiation is in the invisible spectrum, but it would have left an indirect reflection in the visible spectrum. So you would have seen some sort of a reflected light inside the tomb. I can give you the amount of energy, but I think it's something like 1.3 MeV. It would not have caused an explosion in Jerusalem or anything like that, but the amount of superficial particle radiation that was left on the topmost fibers of the shroud would have left enough energy to have caused something like analogous to, say, an earthquake.
Oh my! Would people had, if they were there, would they have been blinded for a moment?
No, you really wouldn't, because the particle radiation, like most radiation, is in the invisible spectra.
All right.
You would see a little bit, but an earthquake, if you read the end of Matthew 27 and the beginning of 28, it's vaguely written, but it does infer that an earthquake occurred at the time of his resurrection.
And what do you believe happened to the body? Did it vaporize? What happened?
Well, the best explanation I can give you is that it goes into a space-time warp. I think they call them wormholes. That is not something that violates the laws of science. Einstein predicted back in the 30s, Einstein and another scientist, I believe his name was Rosen. Space-time travel is actually part of the theory of general relativity. It's just something that us humans cannot do. But it would explain several times after Christ's resurrection, where Christ Remember on the road to Emmaus when he's talking to the downhearted disciples and he breaks bread with them and they recognize him and he immediately vanishes.
Right, right.
And reappears later. And twice in John, the apostles are inside a locked room and Christ suddenly appears inside there. It would explain things how he, the Bible says immediately after, I believe, his death or his resurrection, I'd have to look it up, but he descends into hell, and of course, he ascends into heaven. And all those instances could actually be explained by someone traveling in a space-time warp, which, again, does not violate the laws of science. It's just something you and I cannot do.
The fact now that you're getting further credence to your theory in an indirect way,
mm-hmm.
what does that do to the investigation of the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin?
I think what it should do is it should, there's a very simple first step, and Ray calls for it in the papers. In 2002, they did some restorative work on the Shroud of Turin. It was for like a month or more. And part of the restorative work was to remove the patches that were put on the shroud in 1534 to repair some burn holes. And they removed a lot of soot and charred material. Ray says you could carbon date the soot and charred material. I say you could even find one of these chemical isotopes caused by particle radiation in that soot and charred material. That would be an initial first step that could be done. And then if that yielded the results that we're predicting, then we could test a piece of linen that has already been removed from the shroud, or a piece of blood that has already been removed from the shroud, or some pollen that has already been removed from the shroud, or just a few, literally, not even a thimbleful of grains of limestone. You could simply send a scope underneath Jesus' tomb, which has been sealed over since the 300s. So it's pretty pristine. And you could, these traces of these isotopes created by particle radiation would be all over the tomb, all over the cloth, all over the particles on the shroud.
Now, why do you say, though, that the shroud was from the first century? And Raymond Rogers says it's between 1,300 and 3,000 years old. Big difference here.
Mm-hmm.
Even though his dates could correlate with yours, he does give it a window where it could not.
Well, he's playing it safe because he doesn't know exactly. He subscribes a test where you examine the vanillin and lignin growth joints. That's getting a little complicated here. But it's a rough approximation. If you carbon dated...
And by the way, that vanillin is a chemical compound found in plant material, right?
Yes, and he says the absence of it might give you a rough approximation of the age of the shroud, and so that may be part of the reason why he's leaving a big area of an estimated range. But if you look at all of the archaeological and the numerous other medical and scientific evidence, in fact, of the thousands of tests that have been done on the Shroud of Turin, only one, the most controversial one, its radiocarbon dating, is inconsistent with its authenticity, and its authenticity says that it was in the first century. This is a Jew. He was executed by Romans in Jerusalem. He was buried by Jews that had a detailed knowledge of Jewish burial customs, and a miraculous event happened to his dead body after it incurred all the acts of the Passion, and it was crucified, and the man was killed. This is a corpse in rigor mortis.
Now, of course, a lot of Jews were crucified during that period. Why are you so sure that this one might be the shroud of Jesus Christ? Because of the radioactive burst that created the image? I guess a common man could not have done that in its death, his death?
That would be the biggest single piece. But all of the evidence, all of the indicators, and I'm talking well into the at least a score of them, 20 or more of them, all indicate it's Jesus, and none of these things can be duplicated, can be faked. These are unique events. These are unique images. These are unique blood marks, and the images cover a area of about 11 feet. The frontal and dorsal images. And the blood, and he's bloodied from head to foot. These things and all these different symptoms and the little things that the other things that can't be faked, like the Roman instruments, the line of the Roman instrument, where it enters into the right aorta of a dead man, you can't even see that line. You couldn't see it until NASA developed some computer imaging devices that made it visible in the 1970s. None of these things could have been faked or occurred naturally. If somebody wanted to flog a person and make him incur all the symptoms and tortures that the historical Jesus incurred, you could do that to somebody, but you can't put those unique images onto a cloth or those unique blood marks onto a cloth. These are uniquely encoded in a number of ways, and yes, the particle radiation would be the single most dramatic one. But it would just be one of dozens and dozens of unique pieces of evidence.
In your opinion, the Shroud of Turin, are you saying categorically that you believe that the body of Jesus Christ was put in that shroud, with the shroud wrapped around him, and that somehow, miraculously, a burst of radiation, energy, call it what you may, created that image on the shroud?
If we do the tests and experiments that we are calling for, those results could give you an absolute categorical statement. I can tell you now that the overwhelming majority of the evidence indicates that, but I can't say that categorically. But if we could conduct those tests and experiments, then you very well could get a categorical statement. And by the way, we have a nonprofit corporation that funds these tests and experiments. And if any readers or listeners would like to make any donations, again, it is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And if you want to send any donations, send it to RSV. Resurrection of the Shroud Foundation, RSF, I'm sorry, P.O. Box 675, Eureka, Missouri, 63025. We are going to start a round of tests and experiments in the near future.
Well, you give us some updates on that, Mark. The book, The Resurrection of the Shroud, website resurrectionoftheshroud.com. It's linked up right now under Mark's name at coasttocoastam.com. He basically is agreeing that the shroud is indeed a very old relic, and Mark believes that it was indeed wrapped around the body of Jesus. And the latest report that we had was that the Shroud of Turin is much older than suggested by Radio Conrad. I'll be back in a moment.